This is a CBC podcast.
Hi there, it's Pia, and every Wednesday, we're bringing you a bonus podcast, one handpicked story from the week's round of the Sunday magazine that we think is definitely worth hearing or hearing again. Of course, you can hear all of our stories on the full podcast that we put out on Sunday and on the CBC Listen app. All right, here's this week's highlight. Canada's immigration system has long been seen as the envy of the world. But here at home, new data shows that the issue has become a source of worry. Polling from the Angus Reid Institute shows concern over immigration has nearly quadrupled in the past 2 years, with one in five Canadians calling it the top issue for the country. Next week, the Liberal government's changes to the Temporary Foreign Workers Program come into effect. The new rules crack down on the number of low-wage temporary foreign worker employers can hire and in what jurisdictions. Meantime, there continues to be drastic changes in international study permits. They are projected to drop by almost half due to a federal cap on foreign students. So what does this all mean for the changing face and economic picture of Canada? We are going to talk about that in a bit. But first, what's it like to navigate Canada's oftentimes confusing web of immigration policy? Mahekdeep Singh came to Canada as an international student in 2018. He is now struggling to navigate his next steps. Mahekdeep, good morning to you.
Good morning.
You came to Canada from Punjab, India in 2018, and you came here as a student. You took a HVAC course at a college in Peterborough, Ontario. Why did you choose Canada as the country that you wanted to come to?
Canada was the best option to build a future, to build a career, to build a family. It was not like totally my decision. It was a bit my parents' decision to come here in Canada.
I know the sacrifices it takes to leave a country and come here. I'm the kid of Indian immigrants who came to Canada in 1968. So many years later, the sacrifices are similar in many ways. Tell me about the sacrifices you and your family made so that you had the ability to come here.
The biggest sacrifice is I have to leave my family, right? So where I was born, I grew up, I left my my city, my place, my home. Then for that, actually, it took too much money to come here because, international students have to pay three times than the domestic students. So, and then GIC and then expenses and all that. So some of my parents' savings and we have to sell our land. And also we have to borrow some money from our relatives. Then, everything this made me to come to Canada.
Mm. Your parents, helped you with all this money, but what was your hopes and goals?
So it was totally to build my career here in Canada. So very first thing was to complete the studies. So after that, as we know, it was promoted as a PR pathway in India. Then it was totally to focus on permanent residency, whatever pathways they provide, just follow those pathways. In India, there isn't that much safety, security, and the unemployment rate is too much high. At the very first year of my postgraduate work permit, I was independent. I was doing everything by my own. I was having a car. I was having a rental house and I was living a good life here. So that influenced me to stay here in Canada. It is too good to be here. Yeah.
It's too good to be here. That's nice to hear. After you graduated, you were hoping to get PR, permanent residency, through the provincial nominee program. And then you tried a pathway called the Canadian Experience Class. Tell me what it's been like dealing with that.
So when I just completed my graduation, I started looking into the streams. I got to know there are these streams and I can be the best fit in this one. I started working on it. Now they have changed their priorities. They want healthcare workers and construction workers and transportation workers over us. But they never told us these things in the previous years that the country needs these people in 2024 or 2025. If they had done so, then we have focused on those things that country needs. But again, in 2022, 2023, whatever they told us, we were doing that according to the books, by the books. But here we are still suffering with these policy changes.
What's the emotional impact of all of that?
Whenever I think of to leave the country, I got goosebumps. I got tears in my eyes because, like spending 6 years of my life, six crucial years of my life in this country, habitual to this life is a dream, I can say. And I was totally dreaming to build my career, my family here in Canada. Even my fiance is right now living with me. Don't know what's going to happen in the future if I have to leave the country.
You've worked in security. You went to North Bay, Ontario to work as a baker. You had a post-grad work permit. It expired in July. And so now you're here in our country on a visitor's visa, hoping to re-enter through the TFW program, the Temporary Foreign Worker Program. You just kind of alluded there to the anxieties and the stress of all of this. How are you thinking about things now?
I haven't got decision on my visitor record file yet. So maybe they're going to refuse it. Maybe they're going to give me for 6 months or a year. I will stay here for that much time. I will go for the option, whatever option I will have, even if it is a temporary foreign worker program, or if I picked my file in CEC because I have a good score in Canadian Experience Class 2. But as they pause the files and the score is too high nowadays. So, yeah, I think the options will change in the coming time because they're still changing the policies, they are still changing the programs. So it is different. Every morning is different, and I have to take decision every morning, every night, so that I can do something to stay here in Canada. I don't want to do anything illegal. I don't want to do anything wrong. I'm doing everything by the books. But yeah, if my work permit, sorry, if my status got expired, if they refuse, or if my visitor record got expired, I will leave the country. I will try from my back home India if I can come back in Canada. But let's see how it works in future. I can't say anything right now.
You're part of an advocacy group that's been holding regular protests in Brampton, Ontario. There are other similar rallies that have been happening and continue to happen across Canada. What do you want people in our country to know about what you and others in this group are facing?
The very first thing I want to know them is we have done everything that Canada government, their immigration told us. Whatever they told, whatever the pathways they given to us, we followed all those things. Now we are eligible, we are qualified, we are experienced in every single thing. But now, due to elections, they are just putting everything on international students and immigrants. There's an anti-immigrant propaganda going on, housing crisis, job crisis, but we are not the reason of that. They are the policies, they are the things, the decisions that government made in the previous years put us, even the Canadians and us immigrants, in this situation now. So I just want them to come at our protest location, ask us just what is the exact thing. But again, I will say we have done every single thing we can do. Now the government has changed the rules in the mid of the game. That's why we are suffering.
Mehakdeep, thank you for sharing your story with us. That was Mehakdeep Singh. Armin Yalnızian is an economist and the Atkinson Fellow on the Future of Workers. Mikhail Skudarud is a professor of economics at the University of Waterloo in Waterloo, Ontario, the director of the Canadian Labour Economics Forum, and the Roger Phillips Scholar of Social Policy at the C.D. Howe Institute. Both Armin and Mikhail have been studying and writing about immigration for decades. Good morning to you both.
Good morning.
Good morning, Pia.
Mikhail, let me begin with you. We'll dig in sort of to the bigger issues in just a bit, but when you hear Mehakdeep's story, what is going through your mind?
Well, it's heartbreaking, Pia. I talk to students, international students, every day. I teach in the fall term, over 600 first-year students. I hear the stories, and Mahdi's story is not unique. The system has changed. It's the goalposts are constantly moving, and the one thing you expect from a government is when people uproot their lives and migrate to Canada, that they know what the rules of the game are, and those have been constantly changing, and it's heartbreaking to listen to.
Armin, how about you?
Oh, what he said. I mean, this is like people are entering the country on a lottery on the hopes that they are going to be able to gamble. I'm listening to Mahdi's story and thinking he's been doing this for 6 years. He'll do anything to do it. Everything he's done has been legal. And he is being branded as somebody that we shouldn't have. He's exactly the type of person we should be building our future on. And it just is bewildering that we are not doing more to keep these people that come here, give up so much and want so much to build a life here, as my parents did, as probably everybody on this call just did.
Yeah, my parents, Mikhail, how'd your family?
Mine
yep,
too. Yep, I came here as an immigrant, as a child. Yep, exactly the same.
Okay, so Armin, this individual story that we just heard of Mahdi, and like you just said, like we all have our stories, right, is connected to this much bigger story of our Canada and also the enormous population boom we have seen in recent years. So just to put some context around how much it's grown, Canada's population grew by 3.2% last year. That amounts to 1.3 million people. It is the fastest rate since the late 50s, and the increase is largely through immigration. So if we can just back up for a moment, Armin, why have we seen this kind of growth?
Largely because of what is happening everywhere in the global north, which is a demographic transition from the baby boomer era to the baby boomers no longer can work era. And in the intervening four decades, we have seen falling fertility rates. So the solution to tightening labor markets has been to bring more people in, except the pandemic poured fuel on that fire. And so there was a great deal of oversteering to meet legitimate and illegitimate claims of labor shortages. Legitimate if you say that, especially in areas that were already depopulating or aging, like small towns in eastern Canada, Quebec and East have been really having a terrible time trying to find people to provide the services for the people that are remaining in these smaller towns. And that's true across the country, but on stilts in eastern Canada. But there's also large employers that are using this moment to say, we can't find a Canadian to do this job, put in parentheses, at the wages that we are offering or under the working conditions we are offering. And they are getting a good hearing from a federal government that is very nervous about seeing the number of small businesses decline, the ones that hung on by their fingernails throughout the pandemic, hung on by their fingernails as interest rates rose. And so they're getting a very good hearing. They're a very effective lobby. And we definitely oversteered in the direction of making life easier for them for reasons that maybe Mikhail and I would also be persuaded by if we were in the driver's seat. We are not. And that distance from having to make these very, very difficult decisions make it very easy to complain about how things were done. But we already have a sense that they're walking this stuff back, that they themselves acknowledge they oversteered.
Okay, we'll talk more about the temporary foreign workers aspect of this in a bit, but I want to stick with the international students because I'm kind of breaking our conversation down in these two different groups. I know many, many people fit under them and in many ways. But Mikhail, you know, Mahdi said, look, his work permit expired in July. And I think you estimated that approximately 130,000 permits could, those kinds of permits could expire this year, though the specific data is hard to come by. What are the consequences of that number of permits expiring, or what do you think might happen?
It's hard to put a number on it, Pia. So that is very much a very rough estimate. I mean, you know, historically we had many international students coming to Canada who came because the value of the education they were getting was high and it was valued by employers in their home country. So they would come here and study and then return home. What has happened over time, and I would actually characterize what's happened over time as a bit differently than Armin. This was very much a part of the Liberal government's agenda. This was, if you look at Bill Morneau's Economic Growth Council, that was led by the two founders of what's called the Century Initiative, who had very ambitious population growth objectives for Canada. They said we needed a population of 100 million people by 2100. That's been a very key part of the Liberal government's agenda. And the population growth started to take off in 2016. When you look at the numbers, this isn't a post-pandemic thing. That's when it started to take off. So what's happened is migrants are increasing coming here, believing that the way to PR status is through these education programs. So they're not coming here for the education anymore. They're coming here, they're enrolling in those programs simply because that's the ticket to PR status, and they'll pay anything and do anything they need to do. And so the government now has just completely changed the goalposts. And I think that's the fundamental part of the problem here.
Armin, you mentioned there's so many pathways, and we heard that from Mehekdeep too. He's just trying to navigate the system. I think when almost any Canadian travels abroad, oftentimes someone comes up and say, how do I come to Canada? And I would say, I don't know. I was born here. I don't know. But even if I did know, I think I'd have a hard time explaining it to them. Why are there so many streams?
I don't know. I don't know how policy gets made in that respect, but I think there's constantly people negotiating for a change to the rules, and these rules get changed quickly. To McCall's point, absolutely he is right that the Century Initiative was a overriding issue that we, the so-called country of immigrants, decided we needed more people. They just never clarified that they don't care whether it's permanently temporary people or permanent people. I mean, the story about I want to come here, I wanted to create a life for myself, I wanted to have children here. That is the Canadian story. Our story was not one of, you know, come here and take your chances. We have a whole industry that has blown up around the world to recruit these people on a false promise. They cannot promise that they will make that two-step transition, come here as an international student, and you're on a track to getting a job here, and then you're on a track to becoming a citizen. They can't make that promise. But what we have seen is, because there's been so much pressure because of news like this and because of this absolutely appalling story that was covered in the newspaper, that, you know, I think it was Rupa Banerjee, who is an immigration specialist at Toronto Metropolitan University, told me that when we were looking through how many different pathways are there, she said that there are 2,000 distinct pathways, or 2,000-ish distinct pathways, because you can do exactly what this student did, which is, let me try this, let me try that, let me try the other thing. And then for a period of time, you might be undocumented. And then there's all these little mini kind of boutique niche regularization programs where, yeah, you might have run out of time, let me give you a little bit more time, but no promise that you'll become a citizen. All that said, we know that these are like the grade A selection for becoming future citizens. And we're seeing, based on StatCan reports, we're seeing a rising share of these students actually making the transition ultimately after 5 years, after 10 years, into permanent residency status. But that's 5 or 10 years of not knowing which way you're going. And basically, it's a crapshoot, 50-50 chance that you'll make it. It's terrible.
I was looking at an Abacus polling data from this morning. The top issues for Canadians, one of them is immigration. It's about 27%. So 27% of the people polled said immigration is my top issue. It's broken down by what party you said you supported. So 54% were Conservatives, 9% Liberals, 6% NDPs. I put that out there in a backdrop kind of way to the backlash that we have seen or the changing support for immigrants in many Western countries. Mikhail, because I think it's important to understand that context, has there been a shift in empathy by Canadians towards people coming to our country and wanting to stay and letting them stay?
I'm an economist. I deal with economic data, not with opinion polls. I mean, certainly I've seen some of those opinion polls, and just my own experience from, you know, I talk to people in my own world there, and sure, I see that there has been a change in sentiment. It was entirely predictable. You know, as I said earlier, I'm an immigrant myself to this country. I was embraced by my family. We came here with no other family in Canada. We were embraced by this country. If there's anything that's motivated my research over the past 20 years and motivated me to step into the public sphere, which I didn't do for many years, you know, you didn't see hear me on shows like this for many, many years, is I'm really worried that the direction this government has taken immigration in is ultimately undermining public support for immigration. That really, really worries me. You know, I have no public, I have no private interest in any of this. But I really get quite impassioned by it because I think there's a real risk in the way that they've taken immigration policy. There's been a lot of bad policy decisions made over the past few years.
I mean, I just want you to weigh in sort of the context we're having this discussion.
I agree that we have done a lot of bad oversteering on policy, but also the sea we swim in politically has changed. And that is happening all around the world. It's happening in Europe. It's happening in the United States. We are not immune from this. The people that are out there that would like to whip up a divide and conquer sentiment, and often it's people that can no longer work, like they're retired, that are saying, you know, they're taking our jobs from us. It's like, dudes, you do not want to do these jobs. You don't want your children to do these jobs. We want people to do these jobs or else our communities are going to be in decline. And it's just low-hanging fruit for the disruptors out there, the political disruptors. And we are seeing exactly the same pattern everywhere. And no, we don't eat pets in Canada, but you know that dialogue is coming here.
Hmm. You know, one of the other kind of arguments that's out there is that there is no one gets a guarantee to stay in this country. And so there are some people who suggest, look, if you're coming to our country, it's up to you to understand what the possibilities are and understand that you might just come here and have to go home. At the same time, if we look at the international students issue, there have been government sites and promotional videos literally that have the slogan, study, explore, work, stay. Mikhail, how confusing is the message for people who want to come to Canada and whose responsibility is sort of to clarify, like, hey, you might be able to come for a while, but not forever?
I mean, it's ultimately the federal government that sets the rules. And so when people come here, of course, you know, even Mahakti, I'm sure he knew there was some chance that he wasn't going to be, there was a risk, let's put it that way. I'm sure he recognized that. But these are expectations. People have probabilities in their mind. And that they, what was shown to the world, to migrants around the world, is Canada is opening up to the world. And we have a new system in place called the International Education Strategy that is going to prioritize international students for permanent residency. And the way you obtain permanent residency is by coming here as a student at any level. All the growth happened pretty much, like overwhelmingly, the growth happened at the college level. So these were two-year diplomas. The government changed the rules so that you don't actually, we kind of changed the signal by changing the rules around how many hours you can work off campus during your studies. You know, they removed all those rules. So they said, we don't actually want you here as students. Like, we know you're on a study permit, but that study permit is actually a de facto work permit. So you can work as many hours as you want off campus. So for sure, we see that in the data. I've got a student working on a project now. We see a huge increase in the number of off-campus hours students are working. So they're not clearly not here for education. They're here to work and get permanent residency status. And so this has become the biggest part of our temporary foreign worker program, are, you know, people on study permits working at Tim Hortons to make ends meet and hoping to get this credential at, you know, from a, you know, a college that's going to provide them with a pathway to PR status.
If you're just tuning in, I'm Pia Chattopadha, and I'm speaking with economists Armin Yalnizian and Mikhail Scudarud about changes to our immigration programs that are coming into effect. Armin, one of the Changes happens next week. These are recently announced changes to the temporary foreign worker program. They come into effect September 26. So again, just to sort of set the table here, these measures are not going to apply to certain sectors. Those sectors include healthcare, agriculture, food and fish processing, and construction. They also do not apply to rural areas or any metropolitan areas with less than 6% unemployment rate. Nonetheless, the TFW program was recently condemned by the UN Special Rapporteur on Contemporary Forms of Slavery because it was, quote, a breeding ground for contemporary forms of slavery. Want to play a bit of tape just before we get to the meat of this conversation. Some business organizations, including the industry group Restaurants Canada, say small businesses and communities, especially those smaller ones, will suffer. Listen to this perspective.
We've always faced a shortage of cooks in Canada. It's gone on for decades now, and operators have tried many, many different things to find cooks. It's just one of those in-demand professions within our industry. It is an avenue of last resort for a restaurateur. It's not something they want to do, but when there's very little labor market for them to draw upon, they have no choice but to use temporary foreign workers. Yeah, so I was speaking with one operator who owns several restaurants in Southern Ontario, and he said he doesn't even take down job advertisements for cooks. He just leaves it up, hoping to get somebody to come in through the door. One of our big concerns with the changes to the program the government has made is rural and remote areas of Canada. So I think about Labrador City or Goose Bay. They have been using temporary foreign workers to fill these positions for many, many years. It's well accepted by the community. The community understands that without these workers, you're not going to have your coffee shops. You're not going to have your fast food restaurant. There's no labor market. It's an aging population. It's very rural. It's isolated. And as a result, the temporary foreign worker program allows citizens in those communities to actually have those services, things that people want, gathering places for communities, right? And because it costs so much to bring in a temporary foreign worker, you know, anywhere from $12,000 to $14,000 at the high end, it could lead to restaurants that will cut back on hours or even shut down because it's just too hard to find these positions locally.
That was Richard Alexander from Restaurants Canada. Armin Yalnizian, how are you assessing the changes to temporary foreign workers that are coming into effect next week?
We're talking a lot about rolling back the number of people, putting a hard cap on November the 1st. We'll have our first hard cap on temporary residents permitted into the country to go along with the permanent residence cap that we have had forever. Long overdue. It's hard to do, hard to get the right number, but at least it's a signal to your point earlier, Pia. It's a signal that you are taking a risk coming here as a temporary person on a temporary permit. But I just want to make the point that intake is one thing and the people who are already here is another. And we've got hundreds of thousands of people in that category, in this permanently temporary category, where people like Richard Alexander would, I think, also argue if they're good enough to work here, they're good enough to stay here. So we need actually policies, not just to control the taps, how many people are coming in, but also what do you do with these people when you come in to get to that point that the UN Rapporteur Tomoyo Obukata said that, you know, these create the conditions for exploitation, not just in agriculture, but in any area where somebody will not say a peep because they don't want to be deported before they have that chance at the lottery of staying. And the last point I will make is go ahead and shut down the taps, and you will see more businesses like the one that Richard is talking about fold. And that means that either we will have not a short-term recession, which is two or three quarters of GDP shrinkage, but a longer phase of contraction because smaller businesses can't make it. And that doesn't mean that they should have temporary workers, but we will need more people coming into the country. So let's change the rules so that when people do come into the country for the needs that businesses say they have, they can stay because those needs are not temporary. They are permanent, as Richard said.
Mikhail, how are you assessing the changes to the temporary foreign workers program? Many of the people who come in through this are low-wage workers, I should add to this conversation.
You know, I have a very different perspective than my co-panelist Armin does on this issue. We could have a much longer panel just on this issue. I think it's a big problem. I think the way we talk about labor shortages in this problem in this country is a big problem. In the summer of 2022, we know that job vacancies were hitting an all-time high. There was a lot of discussion about whether this was a problem, and overwhelmingly, the view and the talk from many people, including my co-panelists, was that it was a problem, that it was a consequence of the aging population, that people were just leaving the labor force, and there was nobody to fill the vacancies anymore. I wrote an op-ed in the Globe and Mail at that time. You can go back and read it, and the headline was, "The Labor Shortage is an Illusion." And indeed, you know, as it was quite simply a consequence of the inflation, that the fact that the prices of goods were increasing faster than what business had to pay their workers. When that happens, there's profit margins are going up and labor demand goes up. This is basic, you know, econ 101. And so as prices went down, so did labor shortages. And now, you know, labor markets are more slack in Canada today than they were then in 2022. There is this idea. Idea that labor shortage is a problem is crazy talk. It's nonsense. It really is. I mean, when I ask my students, would you rather graduate in an economy where jobs are scarce or where workers are scarce? I mean, they don't think labor shortage. They'd love it. When workers are scarce, you know, they don't have to queue up for jobs. The companies are looking for them. That's not a problem. That's really good for productivity, in fact. If we believe in capitalism, we want businesses to compete. Business failures are actually a very healthy part of a good productive economy, because it's, you know, survival of the fittest. If you can't use your workers productively, if your only margin of making profit is to keep your labor costs low, you have no God-given right to exist. You have to compete, and we have a labor productivity problem in this country. Why not embrace those labor shortages and celebrate them?
I know you just said that you and Armin probably disagree on this issue, so Armin, I want to get your perspective on what Mikhail just said there.
I think you need another show. I mean, I have not been arguing for cheap temporary labor at any point in my life. And prior to the pandemic, we had the lowest unemployment rates we had seen since the 1970s, and that will continue. We saw 1 million people added to our economy. A third of the labor market exited since 2019. We had fewer people, like about 270,000 people come into the labor market. That includes the newcomers. So we do have a hydraulic effect that is happening from a historically high baby boomer. We've had 40 years of labor surplus from the 1980s to the 2020s. And it is very difficult for people to wrap their heads around the fact that, yes, the economy is growing, and that's why we need immigration. But without immigration, we would see a net contraction. So for those people that say, just shut the doors, keep the jobs for the Canadians, you will see a contracting economy. And that is exactly what is happening in other jurisdictions that have made this same gambit politically. And it is a political gambit. It's got nothing to do with the economics of the moment. As for wanting businesses to survive and be productive, 100% I'm on that team. I would just caution people that many small businesses will fail, and that's fine. But we will not have seen that kind of failure rate. And what will be left is the big cheeses standing. So there is an issue about the business ecosystem not to be subsidized by cheap labor, but just to be aware that when you just say, let them fail, something big will happen in its wake.
Okay, I can't promise either of you another show on this, but I'm sure we'll have more conversations about it. And I appreciate both your perspectives this morning. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Pia.
Armin Yalnizian is an economist and is the Atkinson Fellow on the Future of Workers. Mikhail Skudarud is a professor of economics at the University of Waterloo, director of the Canadian Labour Economics Forum, and the Roger Phillips Scholar of Social Policy at the C.D. Howe Institute. You can find all the stories we bring you each week on the Sunday Magazine over on our website, cbc.ca/Sunday. I'm Pia Chattopadhyay. Thank you for lending us your ear, and we'll talk to you again on Sunday.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.